listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor. And, well, we were supposed to have Nav Dhaliwal with us here. He is the president and CEO of Bonterra Resources. But just before we went into commercial break, we got a message here in the office that Nav was not available. I don't know why he's not available. I don't know really what the story is there, but he is not available. So I am going to perhaps share a few of my ideas and some of the comments that I made in Vancouver this past weekend at the Metals Investor Forum. I should say maybe just a word about our sponsors today, because there are a lot of things that are happening that are very, very interesting. Bonterra Resources, we were going to hear from them, but they are starting their winter drilling program. They are doing extremely well with their exploration efforts. They have a small deposit of around 270,000 ounces, I believe, if memory serves me correctly, from an area of 200 meters along strike and 200 meters to depth. But now they've got that stretched out to 1.2 kilometers by a kilometer at depth. And if the grades are anything like they were before with their initial resource, then we're looking at something very significant, with lots of more exploration to come. And the stock is trading at around 43 cents. It has a market cap of 82 million thereabouts. But big companies, of note like Kinross and Kirkland Lake, the Van Eck Gold Fund, Eric Sprott, they're owners of this company. It is one that I think is definitely worth looking at, worth considering owning. I do not own it personally. It is a recommendation in my newsletter, but I was hope to have Nav Dhaliwal with us sometime in the near future to give us an update there. Uranium Energy Corporation, we heard in Vancouver from Amir Adnani about the uranium story in general, but Uranium Energy has picked up some great assets during this decline in the uranium market, and that is one also, I think, that, the United States just doesn't produce much uranium. It consumes something like, I think if memory serves me correctly, something like 40 million pounds a year. It produces maybe 10% of that, and it has to import from Russia and all and various other places. Of course, Canada is a main place, main source of uranium that the U.S. gets, but it also has had agreements to acquire from Russia and other places, which also makes it, of course, curious as to why the Obama administration agreed to let the Russians own 10% of our, or a significant amount of our uranium. That's something that's being, I guess, ferreted out geopolitically, politically within the United States. A lot of stuff going on there, it seems. Auron Resources, well, this is Ivan Bebek, the chairman, CEO, the executive chairman of that company, also spoke to us in Vancouver. And I'll tell you, the stock is down quite a bit, but they've got a lot of things going on now in Peru. One in particular, there's one intersection they're waiting for. If that comes in, it's something like a 400-meter intersection in favorable rocks. If that comes through with the kind of numbers that that they've seen elsewhere on that property, then I think you'll see Auron Resources share price probably drive significantly higher. A lot of good things happening with Auron, several properties, and now this year they'll be exploring and providing information and data throughout the winter from their Peruvian properties. Well, Novo Resources has gotten hit pretty hard today, but frankly, I look at it as a potential buying possibility down the road here. I wouldn't be surprised to see Novo fall perhaps to $2 in U.S. money, but the good news today was that they have their permits now to start exploring and developing the Comet Well property, which is really what Quentin Henning wanted to start working on. He had permits for the Purdy's Reward property, and he was able to do some stuff there along with his 50% joint venture partner. But quite frankly, the depth and what he was looking at in down deeper into the basin where he anticipates the gold reefs, the reefs that host the gold to be, that's what we're going to be looking for. I think that Quinton is as optimistic as ever he's been about Novo Resources, the market. I mean, it's a complicated story. It is a complicated geology. It's a new, unusual sort of story. But there's no reason to believe any less now than in the past that Quinton Hennig isn't onto something, or potentially onto something that is very, very significant. And then Genesis Metals, the share price rose fairly nicely, at least earlier in the day today, on some very good numbers. And we'll be talking to the president and CEO of Genesis Metals sometime in the very near future. Now, since we're missing Nav Dhaliwal, and I have a few more minutes before our next guest comes on, we're going to have Daniel McAdams and Jeff Deist with us. In fact, I guess they may be with us very soon. I titled the talk 2018 a year of epic market disruptions, and that was a question mark. And some of the reasons that I think that we may be in for a very, very significant year in the financial markets this year, there are three basic reasons. First of all, we're at that stage of the credit cycle, as Alistair McLeod has talked to us on this show before. We're at that stage in the credit cycle where banks have to start lending money. Interest rates start to rise, so banks were holding all of these treasuries that were created out of thin air by the Federal Reserve. They bought those treasuries, pumping money into the system. It drives the interest rates down. Banks are holding government debt. But now as interest rates start to rise beyond the control of the Fed, the banks start losing money on those holdings. So they start to sell those treasuries, which then, of course, causes rates to rise. But they put that money to work in the form of loans. It actually gets money into the real economy. And when that happens, prices start to rise, which then are good for commodities. They're good for GDP. It's good for GDP, at least in the short run. You know, people feel better about things, except the banks then become more and more aggressive because they're competing with other banks to try to lend money, to try to get the loan business. And then the banks get crazier and crazier until they lend money to such an extent that we have another banking crisis and people can't pay their debts and so forth. So that's sort of normally what happens through these credit cycles, and they're exacerbated. They become greater the more the Fed sends more money into the economy. You have these cycles become larger and larger over time, never allowed to self-correct. The government gets involved and doesn't allow the markets to really work. But I argued in my talk in Vancouver that this is not your father's credit cycle. This is a credit cycle that is much bigger than the last one. It's much bigger than the one that aborted in 2008-2009 that caused the financial crisis. And so we have a massive amount of debt that cannot stand interest rate normalization. So what happens when interest rates hit that point where the next stock market cycle ends? And as Michael Oliver was just suggesting now, given the recent blow-off in the equity markets, he believes that, contrary to what he had been saying, that we could be facing a very significant decline, a very sudden, rapid crash, a market crash, if you will. Well, I was sort of hoping we could avoid that this time, but it looks like, according to Michael, his work, that may become even greater. Then the third major point that I made in my talk was that I believe that we are seeing some major geopolitical winds that are blowing that are not kind to the United States dollar. And we've, of course, been talking to Alistair McLeod and other guests on the show about the possibilities of the dollar losing its premier standing as the world's number one reserve currency. Now, if the dollar starts to lose its value, its purchasing power on the global markets, then I think that if that coincides with the next market correction, then we could be in, Americans could be in for a rude awakening of what might come to pass. Now, all of this is, of course, interrelated with all of this is interrelated with geopolitical stuff that's going on. I can't help but think, and I talked a little bit about the relationship. You know, the petrodollar was based on Saudi Arabia's, our agreement with Saudi Arabia, Nixon, after he took gold away from the dollar. It had to have something to keep the dollar with some value. And the arrangement was with Saudi Arabia to demand payment for their oil in dollars, and the other OPEC nations followed that trend. That really allowed the dollar to maintain its preeminent status as a global currency, as the number one world's currency. But that has been shored up with military actions, and you know, any country that seemed not to want to use the dollar became labeled a rogue nation. So we went after Iraq, we went after Syria, we went after Libya, of course. You know, so it's very, very interesting to see what's going on geopolitically. Well, anyway, we are going to go to a break now. The point I was making is that we have a lot of things changing, a lot of things in play now, I think, that are going to cause a very significant change in the markets this year. The credit cycle, an extreme credit cycle this time, even more so than the last time, and these various geopolitical issues that are coming into play. We may be able to talk to Jeff Deist and Daniel McAdams right now. I think they're both with us. So we're going to go to a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Jeff and Daniel. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Bonterra Resources, a Canadian exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. In 2017, Bonterra raised $40 million and attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kinross, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based VanEck Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource model in 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000-plus meters of drilling, where the dimensions of the Gladiator gold deposit has been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under BONXF.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.